The National Park Service offers a standard map, a brochure map, and a multi-use trail map for the Valley Forge National Historical Park. Grant Clauser has created what he calls a map of Valley Forge, but it is a poem, and the only images we see appear in our mind's eye. And that's a key. Yifu Tuan, a noted geographer, explains that, as such, he studies a particular landscape from above, as the crow flies, perhaps, but there is also what he calls a side view that is personal, moral, and aesthetic. A person is in the landscape from a particular spot and not from an abstract point in space. In our case, Clauser, as a poet, writes, "So when my dog and I topped the southwest trenches where recovered cannon pointed toward the patient British, he is at Valley Forge, and he's on top of the southwest trenches, and so are we." Tuan suggests the essential character of a place, a locale, a landscape, combines both views. And for him, it's clear that the combination can take place only in the mind's eye. Landscape, place, locale appear to us through an effort of the imagination and the human heart. Clauser closes his poem with these lines. "The trail map of Valley Forge shows both Mount Joy and Mount Misery, but doesn't tell you where to begin." We might say, perhaps, that's in part what poetry does. William Least Heatmoon calls it a topographic map of words, where we sometimes learn as much about ourselves, our history, our country, as we do about the place we start from or where we end. All that from O. Allen Weltzien. Poets and professors Marjorie Maddox and Jerry Wemple have come together 20 years after they served as co-editors of Commonwealth, Contemporary Poets on Pennsylvania, issued by Penn State University Press. And they are celebrating the release, May 20th this month, of a new anthology, Keystone Poetry, Contemporary Poets on Pennsylvania, also issued by Penn State University Press. It's a collection that includes the work of 182 poets, with resources for teachers and for readers who want to engage more deeply with the poems. And Grant Clauser is one of the writers included. Maddox and Wemple tell us in the preface that wherever you locate yourself within this multifaceted state, we trust these poems will lead you to that river, that ballpark, that museum, that job, that house, that alley, that open field of imagination. But we also wish for you new discoveries of place, broadened perspectives of home, and a deeper understanding of those who share with you this Keystone State. So, we prepare to enter the world of Keystone poetry, and we can start anywhere. But it's best perhaps to begin with the co-editors, Marjorie Maddox, Professor Emerita of English and Creative Writing at Commonwealth University of Pennsylvania, Lock Haven, and author of 17 collections of poetry, and Jerry Wemple, Professor of English at Commonwealth University of Pennsylvania, Bloomsburg, author of 4 poetry collections, which are, as we'll learn, mostly rooted in Pennsylvania. Jerry, you've always been fascinated by this place, Pennsylvania, and the Commonwealth, and so it would be a natural for you to not just write out of Pennsylvania yourself, but to look to others who do.
Yes, I am a Pennsylvania native born in Dunmore, your neck of the woods, and I only found out in the last couple of years that one branch of my family has lived in Pennsylvania since 1740, and since the 1770s has lived in within 10 miles of where I am now in Bloomsburg. So lots of deep Pennsylvania ties, but I've always been fascinated. I remember those few years we had another conversation where I talked about I lived in Florida for a few years. And one of the first things I did the summer I moved back was I had an old beat up Buick, and I had a camera, like a pretty, bottom line 35 millimeter film camera back in those days. And I would just drive around and take pictures of places and talk to people and far as I could with an old beat up car and a little bit of gas money, because I always was interested in Pennsylvania. And then as I matured and became a professor and a poet and talking to people and just always fascinated by lots of people love Pennsylvania and lots of people write really well about Pennsylvania.
And Marjorie, how about you and your roots? Are they always here in Pennsylvania?
No, I have to confess that I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, but I'm flat Ohio. So I just fell in love with the mountains and hills of Pennsylvania. And I lived here since 1990.
One of the things we think about each of you has to do with your sensitivity to place and the larger implications of being from somewhere, belonging or not belonging, or those sorts of things. You have so many poets, and you've had the challenge of finding them, I'm sure, and having submissions and reviewing so many. That's the daunting part. Tell us about the nuts and bolts of how you came to find these poets and then sort through them.
Well, we've both been writers in Pennsylvania for a long time, and we've both been going to conferences. You just developed this network of contacts, and now it's kind of easier with social media to put out calls through your network of contacts, and there are some academic listservs. And for this particular project, we also, directly contacted all the contributors to Commonwealth, and said, feel free to share this. I don't remember exactly, but I'm guessing well in excess of 600-700 poems we had to have read, and then whittling it down and making the decision. Commonwealth had sometimes multiple poems by one person. This has only one poem per person, so it was trickier, and trying to be equitable in that, okay, you can't be all Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, population centers are, but trying to get those little towns in Venango County represent.
And Marjorie, you're in the heartland too, as Jerry is. What struck you about sorting through and reading all these poems? Was there something that was revelatory about anything other than the fact that Pennsylvania has a lot of great writers when you finally exhaled?
Well, I think that was one of our, key criteria. Did we have that exhale? Did we have that moment once we were reading through the poems? And just, yes, so many outstanding poets. And then poets would recommend other poets. And the anthology is out. We're finding out about even more poets. That happened after Commonwealth, too. We kept finding out about, additional poets. So it's just really a wealth. And then my work with Poetry Moment on WPSU has let me know about additional poets as well. So that's been exciting.
And again, I asked you, Jerry, when we were talking with you about your book of essays recently, what do you do when you have so much wonderful material and you're talking about geography? How do you structure an anthology like this to make sense and not just to be arbitrary about it?
Well, this borrows sort of on that framework of the earlier Commonwealth version. I think we have a slightly different divisions, but there are seven divisions, starting with the Philadelphia and its suburbs type of breakdown, and going up along the eastern edge of Pennsylvania to those old mill places and the mines of the Northeast, and then moving, out. But eventually we get to Erie. But there's seven different divisions, and you can, even within the divisions, you can kind of follow a logic. If you had a map, you could go, oh, they're moving this way now. So it's not Rand McNally, but it's poetry right now.
That's a wonderful observation that a poem might be considered a kind of map. Tell us a little bit more about that observation, that a poem might be a map.
I think it definitely is a map to those around us, the places around us, a map to kind of deeper within yourself, deeper within others. And in the case of this anthology too, a map to discussion. So there are discussion questions for teachers, for classroom situations, and also lots of writing prompts. They're all connected to the poems in the anthology. And some of them also make connections to the Commonwealth anthology. So if you have the earlier book, you can use both of them to go back and forth.
And that's wonderful because it is a book, and yet it's participatory in that way, in that you are having a conversation with us as readers or stimulating a conversation for us to then follow through and see what we see or hear around us or what we see in the poems. What about the sense of the generations, young and all the way to the wise elders? You've done that as well.
Yeah, I think so. One of the bittersweet things is that we have several elder poets who, in the making of this book, passed away. But for us, I think it's such an honor to publish, probably for them, maybe their last time that they got published. And then we also have, I think maybe our youngest person is in his early 20s. So there is a big range of people. I mean, usually people don't get a name or out there that much in their 20s, but I mean, and there are several people in their 30s and 40s through the generations. I'm sure there were a couple of people who were in their 80s. So there's different generational voices.
Which ties into, the wide variety of how we see history, how memories shape our own histories, and a wide diversity of traditions, languages, cultures, all kind of gathered here.
And the preface points to the power of words, the words that may be only spoken in one valley area or in narrow areas of Pittsburgh, but it is words too that help us identify our place as well as the address we have on our homes or apartments or whatever. And you show that so well.
Yeah, I think you can definitely tell, especially amongst the genre of Philly poets, especially the like maybe people who are a little older and their word choices and what they're referencing and the places that they are referencing, and those are unique, right? Those are their visions of a Philadelphia. But as you go out of Philadelphia, you get much different, many different voices. I always find that fascinating about Pennsylvania. You can just go a town or two over, and people are a lot different, and it's really interesting.
Add something cool about Philadelphia. I was just in there and I was in the Comcast 2 building, and on the ceiling there were the poems from Commonwealth being scrolled across the ceiling. I think they might have just been the Philadelphia poems, but I was just in shock. I had no idea. I looked up and I recognized the poem by Jeanie Murray Walker right away, and then there was one by Lynn Levin, and on. So it was just amazing to see. So Commonwealth is getting around, and now 20 years later, here we are.
There are certain things that we think of perhaps that resonate with us when we hear your name, Marjorie, or yours, Jerry. We think of Jerry and the river, perhaps. The river is something that you reverberate with, and not just as a physical geographical marker in the landscape, but the Susquehanna River means a lot to you. But you have other writers who address or center their work in and around or respond to the rivers, Three Rivers, for example, or the Schuylkill River or whatever, but rivers, for example, very important in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I think the rivers in Pennsylvania are so important to our history. They sometimes divide us, like, oh, you live on that side of the river. And also, they were the things that really helped the state population grow and the economy grow. And people identified with them. And they also, as we know, sometimes were dangerous. Right. When we think about all the floods of the Susquehanna, the 72 flood, people still remember that. So they're this living, vibrant thing, and people enjoy them. They like to be on them, be near them, but they also are like a little wary sometimes.
And Marjorie, you are someone who has had a wonderful experience with a partner artist, a photographer, and you talk with each other ekphrastically. Are there such poems here, or poems that bounce off visual arts or music, things like that are contained within?
There are several poets who write ekphrastically and are responding to some work of art or something in a museum or, something that they see while hiking in the woods, and there's a monument there, other artwork, other poetry. So there certainly is a lot of that in here as well, yeah.
And Pennsylvania is quite a sports-loving state. And Marjorie, we think of you often with the wonderful Little League poems that you capture that experience of youth and the sport, but also your own love of baseball and your family history of baseball. What about other poets in this collection? Anybody addressing sports?
Yes, there are several addressing sports. There's one about hockey. I have one about baseball, and there's several others that, yes, deal with sports because that is so central to identity in Pennsylvania.
How does a book like this, because it is so important, not just for poetry lovers, but for teachers who would want to use it now because of the discussion points and writing prompts in the back, how will this book get out into the world?
Well, we've been busy, and so has PSU Press, and so have all the poets in the anthology. The poets have just really stepped forward and organized a lot of readings, and so has the press, and Jerry and I have. One is at Lycoming Arts Gallery in Williamsport on June 1st. They're celebrating their 65th anniversary there, so they're happy to host us, and we're excited about that as well. Then we have a whole list of things. We have Lititz, we have Philadelphia Free Library. But I think we have 10 or 12 already set up.
All over the state,
That
really.
City of Asylum.
So if people go to the PSU Press website and look for our book, there is a link that will show them all the different events around the state. There are several in the eastern part of the state, and the list is growing. I plan to have something here at Bloomsburg University on campus here, and but that date hasn't been set yet, but it'll probably be in September in the fall. There's a bunch, and as Marjorie said, a lot of it is driven by the contributors. The contributors are, and they're like, hey, I can, I want to host something here at
Been
my
great.
town library or whatever venue, and so it'll be like 10 or 12 of them reading, and we'll go, we'll be there too.
Does anyone want to go first reading your poem, Jerry, or your poem, Marjorie?
I'm ready. I guess I'll, because I have a second poem picked out already too. My poem is called Wooksbarre, but it's set a while back, several decades back, and the person alluded to at the end of the poem is George Banks. People may remember that name.
Oh, yes, he was convicted as a mass murderer, and the story was national news.
Each day you buy a newspaper with pocket change, scan the classifieds in the back, circle a few to call. It takes a little while, but you catch on. Joey, the stoner metalhead kid who works in the office, makes it clear when you return from not viewing the third just rented of the day. He phones the numbers you called and they all say, come over. Still available, nice place, especially for the money. You are still young. 2 years at a college that didn't fit, so back home you find a decent job for the times, which were hard all around. But it's near an hour's drive each way, so you look for an apartment. Nothing much, you think, just a place to stay during the week with winter coming. Thinking it over, it is all obvious. The older woman who spoke through a cracked door. The knock that no one answered while the man sat watching in his car across the street. The woman who says her husband just called. Their friend's kid is looking for a place. Sorry about that, she says, turns her back and walks away. Your mother has always urged you to get an education. It's something that no one can ever take away from you. That's true, regardless of what she meant. By then, you'd learned some lessons. Mostly, you did not have to study on them too long. Your world was small and like an Amish horse with blinders. You stared straight ahead, kept following a narrow road. Then you began to enter bigger worlds with harsher lessons. Standing on those porches in early November, the winter wind coming on, you wondered who they saw. It took years before you saw yourself. A half-breed kid born in a coal town orphanage. It doesn't matter all that much by now. You've done well enough. You worked that job for a year, about as long as you could stand it. You tired of having your sub shop order taken after everyone else in the place? Of the clerk eyeing your license plate through the convenience store window like you were going to run off with $5 worth of gas? Of people asking if you worked in the store when you were wearing street clothes like them and not in blue smock with a name tag? A couple of months after you left, in the worst mass murder in the state's history, a mixed-race man from that town shot and killed 13 people, including his own 5 children. He said he wanted to spare the kids the affliction of growing up half-caste. The sole trial defense offering was that the racism of the town had made the man insane. You wondered which slight, which slur it was that made him shake off lassitude, caused mad ire to rise and burn. When you read a newspaper account about the man and what he did, you were saddened but not surprised. The weariness had begun to close upon you.
Thanks, Jerry. And it just demonstrates the power of poetry. Did you select another one for us?
Yes. This one's by Tony Vallone, who unfortunately recently passed away. But was a great poet, a great supporter of poetry, taught at Penn State Du Bois for many years, had a press out there that supported many poets and writers, and just an all-around great guy. And this celebrates spring. The Dairy Queen in Du Bois, Pennsylvania, opens for spring. The line of trucks and cars for the drive-through stretches out the parking lot down along the gravel berm of State Road 219. Windows rolled up tight against the frigid air, engines idling to run heaters. We wait a half hour or more just to reach the speaker so we can place our first order in months. Wearing winter coats, our breath steaming the windows, we need to park in a neighboring dealership lot, spooning the sweetest blizzards ever into our mouths. Flakes floating out of the cloud sky like coconut or powdered sugar confections.
Well, Marjorie, do you have yours ready?
Yes. So this is in keeping with your baseball reference. This is called Throwing Like a Girl. And it's about Monet Davis, who was, you may remember, was the pitcher for the Philadelphia's Tanny Dragon and represented the Mid-Atlantic in the 2014 Little League World Series. Throwing Like a Girl. 70 miles, Monet style, fastball, curveball, flashing into the future ball, every which way but losing. Batters up, so we chant, Monet, Monet, awake, sleeping, warming up for the life worth stealing in this home run of a series we call team, we call you go, girl. Braided phenom with an arm that hurls hope way past today's whirl of photo ops and change-ups. All the way to a close-up of two T-ball boys playing the part, debating, voices escalating, I'm Monet, no, I'm Monet, and a summer of daughters leaning into the pitch that blasts the phrase, throwing like a girl, into the all-star compliment that it can be, that it is. When lean machine Monet takes the mound, smiles as wide as a long drive, then delivers the dream we braided girls of baseball, basketball, soccer, business, science, writing, still need in whatever and every season.
Thank you. And did you have a non-Marjorie Maddox poem?
I have several, but I will limit it to one. This is the very first poem in the book by Jay Perini, who's originally from the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area. I think it stands alone, so it serves as kind of an introduction to the book itself. A Pennsylvania Journal. I had a mostly silent boyhood, shifting in the streets that wobbled underfoot. The coal mines tunneled underneath my life, and corners of my house would fill with soot. I listened as the women weaved about me, offering their stories, naming names. I didn't always care what they would say in those repetitive and heated rooms. The neighborhood was ice or mud or dust, in yards where I would often stop to think. Words are the world's 10,000 eyes. I open some of them with my own ink. In that thick journal underneath my pillow, all the empty pages meant so much could still be formulated, gathered in my hand, a new life wakened by the touch of pen to soft white paper. Year by year, through seasons of the skin, I wrote my way. My steps were wandering and often slow. Time told me gradually what I could say.
Thanks for bringing us Jay Perini, Marjorie. And what's so wonderful is that that gives us the model as the reader when we get to the end, and you suggest that we all keep a journal, maybe not to make into poems that are going to be in your next anthology, but maybe. Now, though, as we close, let me ask you, each as a teacher, how would you suggest people use the wonderful supplements in the back?
Well, both of us, both Jerry and I, used the Commonwealth Anthology in our classes, and I loved using it in my Intro to Lit class, especially because the students became the experts on the place. I had students say, oh, I know the person mentioned in this poem. He was a friend of my grandfather's. You know, that was just exciting. And then they do a little bit of research on the area to find out more, or if it was a place that they didn't know. Some of them had grandparents, relatives who were coal miners. Some of them, you know, worked in the steel factories. So they could bring a lot to the discussion of the book. But for this book, yes, we've included these discussion questions that not only connect the poems together, but also connect the poems to people's lives, students' lives. And we're talking high school and college. You know, this can be on several different levels. And then lots of writing prompts. Get students, you know, or writers and, you know, of any age writing about place and the importance of place in their lives.
I think one of the most valuable things that students can learn is that literature happens everywhere, right? That it's not, oh, literature is about New York and Paris, but there's also Centralia and Harrisburg and Pittsburgh and, you know, that small town in Venango County, right? It happens everywhere. And as Marjorie points out, our students largely come from Pennsylvania and they recognize, oh, this is a road I've traveled. That's my town, or that's the town next over from me. And so they start to realize, oh, these are pretty good. You know, one of the reasons I know Marjorie did this for many years at Lock Haven, we bring in nationally known writers, but we also bring in local writers so that students understand, hey, our lives are interesting and they're worth writing about. And maybe it inspires some of them to try a little bit on their own.
Jerry Wemple, professor of English at Commonwealth University of Pennsylvania, Bloomsburg, and Marjorie Maddox, professor emerita of English and creative writing at Commonwealth University of Pennsylvania, Lock Haven, each a noted poet, and they are the co-editors of a new volume of poetry. It's titled Keystone Poetry, Contemporary Poets on Pennsylvania. It was released on May 20th, 2025 by Penn State University Press. And it follows by 20 years the original Commonwealth, two separate words, Commonwealth collection that was also featuring work by contemporary poets on Pennsylvania. They will be reading at an event this Sunday, June 1st, in Williamsport at the Lycoming Arts Gallery at 1 o'clock, and just looking down the list, on August 8th, they'll be in Wilkes-Barre for a word-to-word reading, part of the series offered by the Gathering Community Space, and so many more opportunities to see them around the state and even across the border in Youngstown, Ohio, in October. For more information on the web, psupress.org. PSUPress.org. It's Keystone Poetry, Contemporary Poets on Pennsylvania, and there are 182 poems with questions and more in the back of the book. The co-editors spoke with us today, Marjorie Maddox and Jerry Wemple, poets in their own right, and they read for us, and we thank them for that. For more information, PSUPress.org, PSUPress.org.